Oh, good afternoon, intrepid people. So great to have a whole day like this. Since we've been studying the Vimalakirti Sutra, the whole subject of bodhisattva is just right here every time we take it up. And of course, it's written as what I call a fairy tale. It's full of magic and full of great beings that are taller than the ceiling, sitting on very tall seats, and are being transported in somebody's hand into a whole nother world, and then being brought back again into the same tiny room. It's all fabulous. It's a fable. And because it's a fable, I think it's amusing for us. Now, first of a kind of, we love fables. We love them as children because it seems real as our own life, or even maybe more real. And there's a secret in that, because our own life isn't any more real than a fable. It too can be written, if you wanted to write it, as an incredible story, full of great beings on high chairs, or swift-moving rivers, or whatever has been passing through our life as our story. But essentially, the story is about bodhisattva. That word keeps coming up over and over. The great beings on the very high chairs are the greatest bodhisattvas, who come and sit with Buddha in this lay person's little bedroom. We talk a lot about bodhisattva practice and the bodhisattva way. When we first were sitting with Koban many, many years ago and decided that we wanted to have our own organization and get a 501c3 nonprofit and have a name, Koban said we should call ourselves Bodhi. And none of us knew what that meant. None of us had ever heard that word before, Bodhi, all by itself. Oh, he said, it means enlightenment. Oh, my word, we thought, how can we do that? We're just a scruffy bunch of hippies, and here we are naming our little organization Bodhi. But we told the state of California that that's what our name was, and they accepted it. And so we had to accept it and begin to think about and try to understand what it meant to be calling our little, tiny little group like this something as exotic as enlightenment. It seemed very, very exotic at the time. And yet, Dogen, of course, points out more than once that when we sit, we're not sitting to get any kind of enlightenment. There is no enlightenment to get. That sitting itself is enlightenment. So to call oneself Bodhi means to call the practice into being as a group. This group is practicing enlightenment. It means we're just sitting down on the ground and not saying anything for a while. It mystifies many people. They don't know what in the world it's all about. And yet I often run into people who have nothing to do with anybody that I know in the Zen world who have a practice, who are already practicing. I met somebody the other day, somebody from Alabama, who was doing a job and interviewing me, and when he heard what my little piece of work was, he said, "Oh, I sit too. And I'm not very disciplined. I should do it more." Oh, yes. So it's not special. Even though we find ourselves in the context like this, it doesn't mean, as Coben often pointed out to us, that those people at home who are not sitting are not practicing. Actually, everybody is practicing enlightenment. And so our life of study of the self is the bodhisattva practice itself. Bodhisattva just means enlightening being. Just a being who is working on sitting. Living sitting, enacting sitting, and being sitting. Not being special, but just allowing the whole of this, whichever particular this we get to be, to come into full flower. Because we're thinking beings, we are so conditioned by so many things to think ourselves into being as a certain way and a certain kind of person. They tell us you are a handsome man, or you must be strong, or this is what being an American is, or blah, blah, blah. Many, many, many things that are laid on our minds as ways that we should be. So originally, when we sit down, we are facing all these should-be kind of things and trying to sort through them and see which ones are actually true and which ones don't add up at all. Maybe I'm not like that. Maybe I'm nicer than they used to think I was. Or maybe I'm smarter than they told me I was. Or et cetera, et cetera. We don't really know ourselves very well until we really sit down and see what do we really love. What do we want? Not ice cream, but what do we want under the ice cream? And what do we want under that? And how do we live those things? So living the life of a bodhisattva means living the life of being awake, and being flexible and very, very straightforward. If we don't know the answer, we can say, "I don't know the answer," and not make something up. If we really, really need something, we can say so. And go there and admit it. There are so many ways that we take a wiggly way in order to protect some sort of idea about how I'm supposed to be. Oh, I'm a nice girl. I would never do a thing like that. I would never think that. I wouldn't ask for that. Nice girls don't do those things. So it's important to check it out. Are we always nice? Do we have to be nice? Is it even wholesome and helpful to be nice all the time? And sometimes people think being a bodhisattva means that, means being nice and accepting everything. Oh, I accept the universe. I accept all the bad things that are happening. I accept you, horrible person, and I bless you, and blah, blah. But it does not mean that. It does not mean to accept what is unacceptable. It means to see very clearly what is unacceptable and then work with it in however way appears. And sometimes we don't know for a long time. I spent 40 years being very, very faithful to my marriage vow because I made a promise. And everything that happened was still based the promise. And I thought, I'm just stuck with this promise no matter what. And then somebody suggested at a very vulnerable point in my life when I thought I was dying, said, you know, you don't have to do that. You don't have to keep your promise if it's not a good idea. And I said, what? Really? I don't? So sometimes we get really, really stuck in places that aren't necessary. And it's really important to all the time try to stay awake to what we really need and where we're going and how we can keep from getting stuck wherever we are. Very often in early in practice, people think that being a bodhisattva means to just be a kind of doormat and let everybody walk on them. Oh, it's okay. Whatever you do, it's okay. But it's not, and that's not a gift to anybody, much less a gift to oneself. And in many ways, it's more important to start with oneself. As Dogen points out, we start with ourself before we begin to address whatever the problems in the world are. That we take care of ourself, our own survival, our own well-being, our own health and welfare, so that we can be strong enough and well enough and wise enough to do what's needed to be done. And often we won't even know what that is until we get well enough and strong enough. It takes some stamina even to find out what we are and what's needed. So acceptance is key to it, to accept what the situation is once we've studied it is vital. It doesn't help to pretend it's something else, or it's going to be something else, or we hope for it to be something else. Just see it clearly. The way it is. But that doesn't mean that we have to knuckle under to what the situation is. It means that we have to work with it, with it, all the wisdom that comes to us, comes through us, comes as us. And often we can't figure it out. If it's a really gnarly problem, we'll never figure it out. But we can live with it and be the change that it is continually, because nothing ever stays the same unless we make it stay the same. We get ourselves stuck It's just anything that we're stuck in is just one more cheap idea, actually. It's just a cheap thought. So figuring out what the cheap thoughts are and the ones that are really deep and helpful is our job. That's the bodhisattva practice. Is this just really one more cheap idea that I'm carrying around, stuffed in my back pocket, that as me? Or is there something else happening here? Is this a happening? Each life of us is a happening, a constant flowing of life through us. So the bodhisattvas that are set up for us, Shariputra and this guy with the sword who's cutting through the baloney of Zazen, Manjushri, they're all icons, just images for us to be inspired by. The most telling one, of course, is Avalokiteshvara, which is Kuan Yin or Canon or the statue that it shows, the many statues. In fact, there are many, many statues all in one beautiful little temple in Japan, each one with a different face, each one with 25 arms or so, each one. Each hand has an implement in it, and each one of those 25 bodhisattvas holding each a different instrument, all ready to leap out and use whatever is needed, whether it's a knife or a spoon or a shovel or a scalpel or a whatever. So that it doesn't mean bodhisattva is some gorgeous figure sitting on a very high chair or some amazing figure sitting on a lion. It just means you and me and whatever we can do. And each of us has certain instruments that we are able to use, which are good, we are good with. Each of us has a kind of skill that other people don't have. And sometimes we don't even think very well of our skill. We think, oh, that doesn't really, nobody cares. Well, maybe nobody cares, but it's what we have to give. Because it doesn't matter whether people care. We aren't here for cultivating social acceptance. We're here on a different kind of social level. We can be with anybody in any kind of situation. We don't have to be something particular. It's wonderful. It's very freeing, really. But it's also takes a lot of stamina and conviction. It's not easy, and sometimes we end up tremendously joyful with people who are tremendously joyful, but many times we cry with those who are crying. But we are able to be that. And I cannot tell you how helpful that can be. Just such small things can be such helpful support for the ongoing of the welfare of the world. When we say save all sentient beings, that's all it means. It means I'm willing to cry with you. Or laugh, or celebrate, or work with. A few years ago, Wendy started emailing me. We've been emailing before because she does so many things for Floating Zendo and has so many messages to send and help me keep informed is so helpful. And she started signing her messages in service. And I thought, oh, of course. And that led me to think about the difference between service and slavery, or service and have to do it. And I've experienced that in a lot of different ways where people think, oh, damn, I said I'd do it and I will do it. Okay, here. Or somebody who is just so glad to do it. And it's not personal. It's just a happy kind of situation. It was a wonderful teaching. Still is. So I will leave it at that. I think that's a nice place to stop. And encourage you to ask questions or make comments. Rod?
What is a zappa?
Person.
What is zappa?
A being. Being.
Oh, just a
yeah, enlightening
being.
Yes. So bodhisattvas don't practice in order to get enlightened. They put off enlightenment until everybody's okay. And if there is being reborn, if there is, we vow to return over and over again as long as it's needed. Which in my book is psychologically very interesting, because once you make that vow, you don't have that feeling of, oh, I can't wait to get out of here. Which everybody feels, of course, 50% we like to be here, 50% we don't want to be here at all. So this takes away that cheap desire, you could say, just to check out.
Those are the breaks. I always understood it slightly differently. I thought the bodhisattva was somebody who actually was enlightened, but they just gave up the opportunity to get off of the
Being
reborn in existence and go to Nirvana, which would be kind of like the old Hinayana notion of being an arhat. You could just go off and you're done.
To transcend.
But the bodhisattva, although they could do that,
yes,
they volunteer to just keep sticking around,
exactly,
helping everybody else until they all get there.
Exactly.
I don't know whether the idea is everybody will eventually get there, and then they can. Maybe you don't worry about it.
You can't. You just can't worry about it.
Just kind of, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
It is.
I don't know. I just, is a bodhisattva enlightened? Or still struggling like everybody else?
A bodhisattva is willing to come be in the struggle. And what Dogen says somewhere is sometimes Buddha, sometimes enlightened, sometimes ordinary person. So,
yeah.
And Dogen also says you don't need to know one way or the other. Just don't pay any attention to those things. Don't try to label what your condition is, because you really don't know. Just be who you are.
Thank you.
Oh, good questions. Thank you. We should do introductions around. I know none of you knows each other completely all the way around. Let's do those names.
Ellie.
Me.
John.
Yeah.
Marie.
Wendy.
So we have G. Koji represented, and Nancy comes from Saratoga, and John from the mountains, and oh, this is wonderful. And Yop from down the street. Marie?
When you were talking about taking care of yourself, it reminded me of when I backpacked with the Girl Scouts. There was one leader who was very, she was very good. And whenever something would happen, like one time we lost a girl, she would never rush into the situation. It was always, it's getting dark. Make sure you have water, make sure you have your flashlight, take a jacket. If she needs any medications, let's get her medications. And she would totally, like, stop all the panic. Everybody, you get prepared, you're going to do this, and then we'd go out and save the world. And find the girl or whatever. But yeah. It was a real, real great teaching for me. So, get prepared, and then you can go out and save the world.
Yes, don't plunge in.
Right.
Yes, very wise. Unless someone's drowning.
Right. But even then, you find something that's floatable. And
yes.
You don't want to drown yourself. Right?
And make sure they're not waving instead of drowning.
Yeah. Right?
Nancy?
Would you say some more about just be yourself?
Well, it's very hard to say, actually, because we don't know what it is. We just can begin to identify where we're fudging, where it's uncomfortable because we're trying to protect something. So a lot of our life of sitting is just paying attention to how much we're making up about me and how much I'm trying to protect my story of what kind of person I am and try to discover what that really is. And not just on a social level, but on a deeper level. What I am when I'm by myself. What I am when I'm not thinking. What I am when my life becomes more troubled. How I am connected with others and with all things. Where my connections are. It's a lifetime study, really, and not a philosophical study, but an experiential one. How do I experience this? How do I experience being my knees? How did I experience my knees, and how do I experience them now? We have a whole many different levels of our visceral experience of being a body in the world. And from that experience, we create the sense of a self, somebody. And then we try to keep that in a little box and make it stay the same, even though we're changing all the time. So as we study it, we see how we're changing, and we can either resist it, put the brakes on, and say, oh, I'm not going to go there, I'm not going to do that. Or we can slowly and carefully, mindfully, take a few steps in a direction that might be very, very different and feel kind of strange. but might be more authentic. So a lot of it is experimentation, because we keep changing. We just don't stay the same. When I was a little girl, I did not want to grow up. I really, really, really didn't want to grow up at all. I wanted to stay in bare feet and climb trees. That's all I wanted to do. We go through those transitions over and over and over again. And I guarantee old age is not going to help you. It's going to be that way too. Even more so. So flexibility is really important. And honesty. Be really honest with ourselves. It's refreshing. If we let ourselves do it, it's really refreshing, and it's hard. It's pretty hard. Is that enough? Thank you. Lake?
Seeing things more clearly, bringing more emotion or less emotion.
Oh, sometimes it's more. Sometimes it's a lot of emotion. Because often we sit on top of the emotions in order not to know. And once we begin to feel it, we begin to think, oh my goodness, there's more here than I ever knew. Yeah. Yeah, it's important to listen carefully to what's happening. You know, to feel it. And then let it teach you. It will teach you. You can work with it. Once you can see what's happening, you can work with it. You have something to work with. If it's just a blur, you don't even know what it is. It's just a malaise that keeps you uncomfortable all the time.
I love the in service.
Yeah.
I think I'll start doing that with Jikoji Matters.
Oh, good idea.
I still struggle at times with that because there are times when I feel that I need to bring the energy, and generally it has been overall good for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's good training. It's, you know, I may have preferred to go on a walk by myself.
Yes.
But to be there and to find the resources that I didn't think I had at the moment was, in general, good.
Yes.
It's good training, the letting go of individual preferences to be there. However, the part of me worries that I will then get to the place where I'm not resourced enough.
Yes.
And so it's a constant.
You have to take that walk. You really do. Don't leave that out. If you need something and you feel that need, take care of it. Because otherwise you'll burn out right away. Yeah.
Yeah. So it often means like more work down the line too.
Because you can't cope anymore.
Sure, but either way.
Yes, right. Yeah. So it's the same.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It also helps to find somebody else to do some of that stuff.
And everything is just work in a different way.
Yes.
Right? Sometimes you have to train someone else. Sometimes you have to set people's expectations that, no, I'm not going to always do this thing.
Exactly.
And then there are consequences, you know, there.
Endless consequences. Oh. Wish you a lot of luck. I've been there. Anything else? Really?
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to articulate this, but does a bodhisattva act out of kind of no self, out of a place of kind of being outside the small me? Or is it, does it work both ways? Is the bodhisattva can act in any form?
There is nothing but the small me.
There's no big me.
There's no big me.
Oh, darn. Okay.
It's form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. So this is what we get.
This is it.
This is it.
Okay.
But knowing that is something else. Operating from that experience of emptiness, of wholeness, mm-hmm. of connectedness enables us to act in ways that otherwise are too difficult because we don't feel the connection with others. So it's important to have that experience and operate from that knowledge, from that deeper knowledge. So it really is not two and not one, and so you can't even say it very well, but it's like that. Yeah. Thank you.
Could I ask one more? I'm still a little bit stuck on the individual preferences, letting go of that being part of practice.
Mm.
For example, the sesshin sochikoji, people often, you know, sleep in or take a walk on their own rather than sitting.
Yes.
And I find that a little bit challenging. It's like, you know, this is a time to practice, right?
Yes.
But they, this is California, so people also like are very used to taking care of
right.
themselves. So how do we, you know, I would like there to be a little bit more rigor, but how do we set the conditions or?
Well, in more rigorous Zen centers, the Eno will, if somebody doesn't show up at 5 o'clock in the morning, the Eno will go and drag them out of their sleeping bag and drag them into the Zendo. And they're in bad trouble as well. So, but Kobono is... Yeah, bye. But Kobono always wanted us to be able to discipline ourselves. And in the beginning, as I say, we were a bunch of hippies. Once I at Hidden Villa, which is where we had our sesshins, I went to the back to use the bathroom, and there was somebody sitting in his cabin, all kicked back and smoking dope. And fumes were just coming out all over. And Coben let that happen until people got it that they were missing out on something. And some people never did get it and didn't stick to it. It just didn't make any sense to them and it wasn't fun. So I think it kind of takes care of itself. If there's real practice going on, if there's something in the Zendo that has deep meaning for them. So the practice has to be pretty strong in the Zendo for people to want to come in. And I would say at a place like Chikoji that it's very helpful for the people who are living there to live by example for others. That's part of the qualifications for being there is that they are willing to do that. Yeah. Because that creates the atmosphere in the Zendo. Right? Now, roll up your sleeves and find those people. Yeah. We're all looking. Yeah. Well, thank you all. Thank you very, very much.